Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about snowshoeing and other winter activities today to begin the show with our guest, Darren Bush, owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports, also an avid winter sportsman. He loves snowshoeing, teaches workshops on how to build your own snowshoes. He's done winter camping, cross-country skiing. So he knows a lot, and I hope you'll join in today. Maybe you're a snowshoer. What do you enjoy about it, or questions about it, or other winter sports? Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Darren Bush, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always great.
Pretty good snow cover across Wisconsin right now. It's been a bit cold, but you've been out
getting
some winter sports in.
Well, that's how it works, right? You go when you can go.
Yeah.
I was up in Marquette in December, and I forgot. I didn't take a raincoat. Because who needs a raincoat in the UP in December? Well, I needed a raincoat. So we actually have more snow here than some of the places up north.
Yeah. Well, we have plenty of snow around. And snowshoes, which I really enjoy snowshoeing. Unfortunately, I've got a knee problem, that ankle, and then I think that radiated to my knee, which has kind of screwed me up for getting out there. But I really enjoy it. Where do you love to snowshoe in Wisconsin?
Pretty much anywhere there's snow.
Yeah.
I mean, I was at Donald County Park over by Mount Vernon day before yesterday with my wife, and it was wonderful, and didn't see many people there. We go in from the equestrian parking side,
mm-hmm.
and nobody goes there. They all go in the other side on the far west. And we didn't see a soul. It was great.
Oh, so that's one great place to snowshoe.
Yeah. I mean, around here, that's great. The Blue Mounds has some snowshoe trails. They're usually a little bit compacted. Mm-hmm. The Arboretum, when it first snows, is nice. But there's an etiquette to grooming, right? When they groom for cross country skiing, you don't want to walk in it, so you walk to the side of it just not to mess up the tracks. But there up north, there's all sorts of great places. Any place you can hike, you can generally snowshoe. The Wisconsin tourism site, Travel Wisconsin, has a list of great hiking and snowshoe trails, so I would check that out.
Yeah, a good place to go to check that is to check that out for sure. How'd you get into it, by the way? Did you... Something you just grew up with, or
no? I grew up in California, so,
so
there's precious little snowshoe. I saw snow for the first time when I was about 12.
Oh,
as a Boy Scout, we went up into the mountains, and it was very interesting and weird and cool. So, when I moved here, obviously you bloom where you're planted, right? And you do mm-hmm. the activities that fit where you are. And my wife was pregnant with our daughter, who is now 35, and we were homebound in this efficiency apartment we lived in. We were both students. We were just about to graduate. And I said, we need to get out of town. And so we saw, pre-internet, obviously, somewhere about Mosquito Hill Nature Center up in New London was having a snowshoe building class. And I said, well, that'd be fun. So I built my first pair of snowshoes in 1987 in New London, Wisconsin, at the Mosquito Hill Nature Center. And I just finished pair 102.
Which is on its way to Minnesota, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's on its way to Minnesota, by Rochester. Yeah.
And you've taught classes yourself.
I have, yeah. It's been a few years since I have, just because it's a time-consuming process. I am going to teach some classes up north. I'm working on basically to try and work with North House Folk School up in Grand Marais, Minnesota. They have a snowshoe class that the teacher, I think, is, I don't know if he's going to retire soon or just trying to scale back, but I'm working with those guys to take over for him at some point.
Well, just looking at our callers, there's some callers online. You can join in. We'll get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. email to ideas@wpr.org. Just on the snowshoe line here, there's traditional, there's the modern. I happen to have the modern type of tubs, I think. You have tubs.
Sure.
But just talk maybe about the differences and so forth.
Well, the more surface area you have, the more flotation you have. And the modern shoes generally are solid deck, so you can get pretty much an exact idea how much surface area there is. With traditional shoes, it's a little more complex because since snow sticks to itself, you can have those holes, right? And so you mm-hmm. see the webbing that's laced together. It doesn't all come up through the holes, right? Because the snow sticks to itself. So that actually gives it quite a bit of flotation. I've got, I don't know how many pair I have, but the one I was using with my wife they're 12 by 60 Ojibwe's. And the snow was probably about 14, 15 inches deep out there at Donald County Park. And I was thinking about 4 inches.
Yeah.
So quite a difference.
Yeah, quite a difference indeed. Frank in Springbrook has a comment, maybe a question. Let's go there. Hi, Frank.
Yeah, hi, Larry. Say, I just wanted to make a comment up here north of Wisconsin. I'm looking out my window. We've probably got 2 or 3 inches of snow. There's a real concern about whether the American Birkenbinder is going to be held the full course, from Cable to Hayward. Those are ongoing concerns, but... I was going to ask your guest, has he ever attended that winter camping event that's held in Sawmill Park in Washburn County? I'm a reporter up here, and I've covered it a few times, and it seems like a lot of fun. And the people who come seem to have a lot of fun doing that.
I haven't been to the one in Washburn County. There's one in southern Wisconsin out in the Kickapoo Valley Reserve that's Wisconsin Winter Camping Symposium or something like that. It used to be in Solon Springs, and Dwayne and Margot Laudig ran it, and they're the ones that own Snow Trekker Tents. And they're the ones that made my winter tent. And this year it was in the Kickapoo Valley Reserve, and I wasn't able to make it.
Yeah, what are they like, Frank? What's the one in Washburn County like?
Well, I haven't covered it in a couple of years, but it's a group primarily from northern Wisconsin and northern Minnesota, and I think they belong to some organization. And that tent maker you mentioned, I think that person or that they're represented. Most people have that tent; it's like a canvas tent.
Correct.
And they have these little titanium stoves, and there are always a few people who make their own tent, and they come up with creative ways of making like their own little furnaces. And it's just a 4-day, like a 4 or 5 day celebration of getting together with friends and enjoying being out there. They always say that, there's no competition when they go out winter camping. There's no bugs. So.
Yeah, I just wrote an article for the Isthmus, which is, the paper here in Madison, the Independent, about, winter camping and tent camping. And I went out in a canoe, actually, and camped on a sandbar with a hot tent. And, one of the things I say, my favorite maxim is, if you want to have solitude, go where people aren't, right?
Mm-hmm.
And putting that barrier in definitely makes a difference. I was sure that I was the only person camping from Prairie all the way down to Wyalusing. I don't think there's anybody else on the river. And it was a wonderful experience. So, but yeah, no bugs.
No bugs.
No mosquitoes.
No people.
No people. No bugs, no people is pretty much how I roll.
Frank, thanks for calling. Appreciate it very much. He mentioned the stove, and I believe you mentioned in the Isthmus article you wrote.
Yeah, there's a gentleman who makes these stoves called Four Dog Stoves. And Don Cavilius, I never know if I say it right or not, but... he makes these titanium stoves that pack up into each other. They're about the size, they're probably 15 by 8 by 8, something like that. And the stove, the pipe collapses into itself, and you pull it apart and put it together. And you stick it out to the side of the tent, what's called the stove jack. And if you just had canvas, obviously, it would just burn, right?
Yeah.
But it's not asbestos, but something like that, where the pipe goes through. And, you know, I had it, it's now in my backyard. I set it up in my backyard when I'm not using it elsewhere just because it's nice. And it was 80 degrees at the ridgepole when it was, you know, zero. So those little stoves really, really crank it.
Jen in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Jen.
Hi, good morning. I just have a question about snowshoeing around the Hayward neighborhood. We're taking a long weekend this weekend and was wondering if you had any trails to recommend. I'll just listen off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling.
You know what? I don't. It's not a place that I go a lot, but I'm sure the local chamber definitely has a list. And as I said, travelwisconsin.com has a list of all the trails up there. But, yeah, I don't know all of them. I can't.
We got lots of Eau Claire listeners are in that area, Jen, so stay listening. Somebody will probably call up and tell you where a good spot is to go.
Sure.
Stay with us. Number to call, by the way, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And let's see here. I was going to go to Drew in Viroqua next. Drew in Viroqua, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, my pleasure. I'm calling to promote Vernon Trails. We've got beautiful snowshoeing, cross-country skiing, and fat tire biking trails here in Viroqua, but as your guest mentioned, Kickapoo Valley Reserve is fantastic. And this last weekend, I was at Greenbush in the north part of the Kettle Moraine State Forest, just west of Sheboygan. The snow there is utterly fantastic. It's deep and navigable for, as I mentioned, skis, snowshoes, and fat tires. But I also wanted to mention the utility of a snowshoe. As your guest mentioned, it helps you float. And now we have snowshoe trails that are really, really well packed down. People are walking on them on snowshoes. I'm in my hiking boots. I'm getting around a lot faster, a lot easier. I dare say I'm having more fun. Snowshoes are meant for deep snow. They help keep you above, just like skis do. I had a great winter living in the North Cascade Mountains about 20 years ago. We had 20 feet of snow with 6 feet on the ground at all times. You couldn't walk 10 feet a minute in that snow, but you had to have snowshoes or skis just to stay alive if you were out there.
Oh, yeah. Drew, thank you for calling, and that's a good point.
Absolutely. Yeah, sometimes after, like in the Arboretum, for example, after a couple days, even a day, everything's packed down. The one small exception is the more modern shoes have crampons built in, right? The claws underneath.
Yeah.
And when you get a lot of compacted snow and it warms up a little bit, it's, you know, pretty much hard snow or soft ice, depending how you look at it. And with the weather as it is now, warming up and freezing and thawing, it's going to be a place where I would rather be in a pair of modern shoes just for that traction than I would in my wood shoes.
Yeah, absolutely. Drew, thanks again. Appreciate it. Darren Bush, our guest today, we're talking winter activities. We've zeroed in a bit on snowshoeing, but we've also gotten into tenting a little bit, and we'll take other questions as well as it relates to winter activities. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Clara Neipertz, our producer today. Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Talking winter activities outdoors today with our guest Darren Bush, owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports. He's also an avid winter sportsman, as we're learning here. And you can join in with your questions. What's on your mind when it comes to snowshoes or winter tanning or any other winter activity for that matter? Give a call, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to Jerry in Kokana. Jerry, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, Darren, I have a couple questions here. One is it mostly just that crampon and the lack of maintenance of the modern snowshoes. I have the old Alaskan style, and I really like them. But how do you take care of those, and what happens if you're not diligent enough to be putting on that? I take it you probably use a spar varnish or something. Can you talk about upkeeping your wooden snowshoes?
Sure.
Yeah, that's easy. So wooden frame snowshoes, they're usually ash and nice and straight grain. The biggest wear area is right under your foot. And it doesn't mean, because sometimes people walk across the road at like Governor Dodge, and I'm just cringing. But also just sharp snow. I mean, snow crystals are abrasive, and you can wear down the varnish underneath the footbed. A good spar varnish is useful. I don't like the stuff from big box stores because it doesn't have much urethane in it. The best spar varnish is the most flexible one. So I use Pettit, which is the house brand from West Marine, which has a high urethane content. It's very flexible, which helps especially when you're varnishing the laces. But Epiphanes is good too. Any if it costs less than $15 a quart, you probably don't want to use it. I think the stuff I get is, it's about $35 a quart and super flexible.
So, Jerry, there you go. And what's the name again of it?
Pettit.
Pettit.
P-E-T-T-I-T.
All right.
It's just that it's the house brand from West Marine, and it's very, very good. I've used it for years.
Years and years. Okay. And if typically, does anything break? I mean, laces might break, I would have guessed.
Well, that's a question I didn't really understand and didn't ask, is there's two kinds of lacing. There's a synthetic lace, which you'll see a lot on some of the tubs, that's usually made out of a neoprene that's reinforced with some fibers in it. Or there's a traditional, you know, rawhide.
Yeah.
The rawhide requires a little bit of maintenance. The biggest problem I've seen with that is mice. So people will call me and say, hey, I got my grandpa's shoes and they're awesome. But man, this mouse got in and chewed a bunch of stuff out of the hole. And that's repairable. I've repaired a few pairs for friends. Not my favorite thing to do because lacing with rawhide's like lacing with really smelly linguine. I mean, it's disgusting. But the biggest problem is cracked frames. And that comes from basically walking over a log or someplace where you bridge the snowshoe between two solid objects.
Yeah.
And that's the most common thing that I see.
Oh, and when you've done that...
They hang up in a bar someplace. We call them wall hangers, yeah.
Oh, man. Jerry, thank you for calling. Dave in Wisconsin Rapids, on to you. Hi, Dave.
Hey, how's it going? Great show, as always. Lately I'm in my 50s. I'm trying to become more like my dad or more like a man, if you will. And I've got a list of things I'm trying to get into. I've already done the whiskey and the cigars. Now I'm at fly fishing, and I've heard that there's a bunch of great fly fishing in Wisconsin, and I'm curious if anyone does that in the winter.
Actually, yes. Catch and release season just opened. But most of the creeks were frozen up. About 80% of them were frozen. It's still catch and release season. And the southwestern part of Wisconsin, don't get me started, there's, I think, 4,000 miles of fishable Class A water. It's these fantastic little, tributaries of tributaries have really nice trout in them.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of, does the DNR have a listing of trout streams?
Yes, they do. Trout Unlimited does as well. If you want to fish southwestern Wisconsin, Driftless Angler and Viroqua is, I would recommend them highly. They're really smart folks and know it better than anybody that I know.
Yeah, Dave, there you go. So you can get out there now. In fact, you're right. The catch and release season just started.
Yep.
Good luck. Appreciate the call. Georgia in Madison, we'll go to you. Hi, Georgia.
Hi. I'd like to talk a little bit about accessibility. My partner was a Berkey skier and had a stroke, and now he skis with a sit ski. It was provided by the CXC organization in Madison. He sits on a chair with skis on it and propels himself with his right arm.
And so, and there is an event at the Birkebeiner that is called the Paraberke that people go to who are disabled and not able to do the, you know, the stand-up Berkey or the full Berkey. And also there's an organization called Accessibility that provides track chairs for the disabled to get out in the woods. So, and I don't know if your guest knows of other opportunities. We're always looking for those.
Yeah.
Yeah, the accessibility folks come to Cunicopia. They're lovely people. For paddling, for snowshoeing, it's walking. So,
yeah,
you know, but, for paddling, there's a gentleman over in Chatham, Minnesota, which is not too far from Rochester, and his website is called, it's Creating Ability. And his name's Kevin Carr and has a daughter with a disability and has invented, all sorts of different things to make paddling more accessible. But as far as the winter stuff, there's people that know far more about it than I do.
Yeah. All right. Georgia, thank you for calling and bringing that up. It's a good reminder. And those accessible tracks that go into the woods that I've seen them in action. You can get around pretty well on those.
Well, I find the Olympics interesting, but I find the Paralympics inspiring. And watching people race, you know, 50 kilometers in sit skis, double pulling the entire thing.
Yeah.
It's like, holy cow, are they fit.
Yeah, absolutely. Georgia, thank you again. Dan in Maquanago, we'll go to you next. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I'm calling just to put it on the plug for retailers. And anybody who makes a living during lousy winters like this, like to encourage people to go out there and perhaps, you know, buy some wax, buy some new skis, do something to help these people stay afloat. They usually are multi seasonal, but right now we're in a season that isn't too kind to us.
Yeah, Dan, thank you very much for that. And
amen, brother. we're well stocked with snowshoes. Our rentals kicked off hard, obviously, when it started snowing. So it's seasonal businesses are really tough, and I'm sure there's people up north, especially, who are struggling. There's Mel's and Riselander, and that's one that comes to the top of head. But there's lots of great retailers all over the state that do this.
Yeah, Dan, thank you very much for calling. It's an important thing. And you do sell, as you say, you sell snowshoes and associated equipment.
Yeah, we sell modern shoes. The places to get the traditional shoes, I haven't found them to be, I don't know how to say this especially. It's not that they're not of good quality. It's just... They're expensive, and the ones that I make and sell cost considerably more than that. But the weaving on them is tight. People go to my Facebook page; they can see pictures of them. It's Facebook, yeah. You know. Canoe Lover is my my user ID. But there's pictures of that. There's also some pictures of the snow camping that I just did.
So. As well, yeah, which is a pretty really cool photo that you've got of that tent and the surrounding area. It's just beautiful.
And the water had just dropped, so there's this beautiful ice shelf around the sandbar. I mean, I was better to be lucky than good, right?
You can join in too, by the way. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Carol emailed us. She has a question about the shape of the snowshoe. Should she get one that is rounded on both ends or rounded in the front and pointed in the back, and why should she do it?
Great question. So, snowshoes, if you look at like a map of the U.S. or of the North America and overlap the kinds of shoes that were used by the indigenous people, you'll find that they're very different in shape. And the reason they're different in shape is they have different strengths and weaknesses. So the ones that are rounded to both ends, it's usually called bear paw or modified bear paw. Yeah. Those are really maneuverable. So if you're walking through the woods, through trees and stuff where you need to turn, trappers traditionally use bear paws because they're, you know, crouching down, working on a nice fishing rig or a trap or whatever. And then you go to places that are more like the plains. Like the snowshoes I built are Ojibwe or Cree style. Both tribes use them. And they're long and skinny with pointy ends on both ends. And the reason for that is when you walk through a prairie, the front will push the grass out of the way. And then there's in between, which is, you know, round on the front and narrow in the back. The tail gives you kind of like a rudder. It kind of keeps the shoe going direct. Generally, I mean, I use all kinds. I've got some that I've built that are, most of the ones I built are the Cree or Ojibwe style because they work best around here. But I've got other ones as well.
The thing I like about snowshoeing, or one of the things I like, when I first got a pair, I put them on and I could use them right away. I didn't need a whole lot of experience or training to use them.
Yep. Some people say, how do you get into snowshoeing? I said, well, if you can walk, yeah, then you snowshoe. And so the two things I tell people when they're just first getting into it, number one is start with poles. Just like cross-country ski poles will work, or just something to give you a little bit more balance. And secondly is don't walk with your legs too far apart, because sometimes people will kind of waddle, and your IT band just will start screaming at you. So just use a regular gait, and the shoes should nest, right? So when you walk, they shouldn't hit each other. And if they do a little bit, that's no big deal. But yeah, don't try and not have the shoes hit each other, just pick up your foot a little bit more.
Yeah, that all very good advice. I've been lucky enough to see some snowshoe racing.
You know,
it is quite an operation.
So the way I look at it is human beings will find a way to race anything, right? I mean, they have those bathtub races, right, where they put wheels on a bathtub and push people through town. And a lot of people who do snowshoe racing, long distance snowshoe racing, they're runners, and they use a very small snowshoe because you really don't need much because it's compact, right? So it might be 10 inches long and 4 inches wide. There is a race. It's still a race. There was a race at the Badger State Games that was, you had to use traditional Alaskan shoes, which are 12 by 60. And, that was, I gave up racing for Lent, right? I mean, I go out to not go fast.
You know? Yeah, I know. But I was amazed at how fast.
Well, they're marathoners, right? So they're running six and a half minute miles with snowshoes on. And I mean, if I can run a 6.5 minute mile, maybe 20 years ago.
it was a lot of fun to watch. I really enjoyed it. Jen in Madison emailed us, Tim Gattenby at the UW has a whole host of programs for people with differing abilities. In addition, the UW-Madison's occupational therapy program assists people with exploring new activities and bridging the gap of any impairment. And Clara, maybe you can put that information up on our page. The ideas at WPR.org/Larry after the show or when you have time. Tim Gattenby and the other, the occupational therapy program.
It's surprising what people can do. I mean, that's the thing is for, you know, most of history, I was like, well, sorry. And a lot of the friends I have that are in chairs who are, you know, paraplegic or low quads, they didn't get that way sitting around the house. They got that way mountain bike racing or skiing or doing active sports. So it isn't like that feeling just goes away. Right. So I've had friends that are wheelchair racers. I have friends that are, you know, do bike hand cycles. Competition doesn't go away just because your body changes.
Gloria wonders, how do you find the best way to introduce kids to outdoor winter sports?
Always take them out before they get cold.
Yeah, quit before they get cold. Too cold.
Right. And this I use this for canoeing as well. It's 15 minutes per year of age. So that's how long they can take it before they go nuts. And if they're saying, I want to stop, daddy or mommy or whatever, grandpa, you're just past where you need to be. So make sure they're warm. Make sure they're bundled up. They get cold faster because they have little tiny bodies, right? Don't push them. You know, there's an igloo thing you can get. I can't remember what they're called. It's like a form that you can make snow bricks out of. And you can build snow forts, build igloos. If you want winter camp with them, if you got snow, make a Quincy hut or a shelter in the backyard and sleep out there for an hour and then go inside where it's warm. But exposure is what works. I mean, my kids learned how to paddle before they could ride a bike. And now it's just part of who they are.
Yeah, that makes very good sense. Well, you have, of course, you have canoes and kayaks, lots and lots of them. And you've got 43 days to Canoocopia. I want to bring that up before we get to the end. Canoocopia is...
Yeah.
Some people may not know about it.
Yeah, it's the world's largest paddle sports expo. I can't say world's largest on public radio. It's a significant paddle sports event here in Madison. We just finished our speaker schedule. That'll go up on the website soon. Over 110 presentations this year. It's a rendezvous, modern day rendezvous, right? There's commerce that goes on, of course, you know, we sell stuff. But mostly it's a gathering of community and education. Love it.
Man, you're going to find everything, anything you ever wanted. And from a whole variety of makers of equipment.
And you know, the best stuff in the world is fine, but if you don't know how to use it, it's just a paperweight in your garage, mm-hmm. right? So the educational component of the show is very important to me because I want people to know how to use what they have.
Yeah, it's one of the things I've enjoyed in the past years. You've had been on the show to talk about it and then maybe have had one of the speakers join in as well. And that's always fun to hear from one of them.
Well, we've got some new folks coming. We've got a guy coming from the Northwest Territories and from the Yukon. We've never had anybody from the Yukon before, and that's going to be great. So yeah, it's expanding geographically, which I'm really happy about because, you know, it's a big world. There's lots of places to paddle.
And then the dates for that, just so get that out of the way.
March 8th through 10th.
March 8th through 10th. So it's coming up, actually.
Yes, it is.
And if you go to Rutabaga Paddle Sports or Canoocopia online, you're going to find...
Yeah, if you go to rutabaga.com, there's a link to it.
Yeah. A listener emailed us, a novice snowshoer, and wasn't sure if they could wear any of their winter boots or look for a kind of... You need a special kind of boot to wear with snowshoes. Any advice on that?
You don't really need anything special. I mean, Sorels work really well, any kind of winter boot that's insulated. But if you just have a hiking boot and it's not too cold, you definitely want something to put on to keep the snow out of your boot. And there's things called gaiters, which clip onto the lacing of your boot and go around the boot and then go up your leg just under the knee. And if you have those on and they're installed properly, you won't have snow go down your boot. And that's one thing that a lot of folks use.
Yeah, and a lot of reasons why people don't get irritated when you get... that's happened to me. You get snow down your boot.
It's happened to everybody. It's just when it's really deep, especially. I mean, I wear a little pair of snowshoes going out to my wood pile just because I hate snow inside my boots. It drives me nuts.
And just to go along with, Matthew just emailed us. He went snowshoeing in deep snow, and despite wearing gaiters over his hiking boots, the back of his thighs got wet from the snow thrown up from his shoes. And he wonders, what kind of pants do you recommend that are cool enough while exercising but keeps your legs from getting wet?
And traditional shoes do throw up quite a bit of snow in the back because they're kind of spring-loaded to keep the toe up. I mean, there's plenty of different kinds of things. Just a pair of rain pants works fine. They don't breathe as well, but they work. But there's also kind of a winter tight that has some wind blocking to it, but it's more breathable. And you see the skiers wearing them. That's not so much the super fast guys. They're in Lycra, right? The rest of us are wearing just kind of a pair of tights that are a little thicker and a little warmer.
Yeah, absolutely. Clara just let me know that the link to Adapted Fitness Program is on our website. She's got it up already for those who were talking about assisted help for many, many people. And we've got that link up there. And, of course, we've got the link, I'm sure, to Rutabaga.
And if you want to see the wheelchairs that are motorized, they'll be at Kanikopia. They have them there.
Wonderful!
They're like little bobcats with seats in them.
Yeah, they're great.
Yep.
Darren, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it. Always fun.
It is. Thank you for having me.
Darren Bush, owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports of Madison, got a great new building out there, and we've got Kanikopia coming up. I'll probably be talking about that down the road a little bit more as well. Great to have him with us. Well, if you're out there snowshoeing or cross-country skiing, you're probably not going to see a badger. But our next guest is doing a lot of research, or has done a lot of research, on the badgers right here in Wisconsin. We're going to learn about that, and she will answer any question you might have about our state animal, the badger. That's next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.